Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up. I am your host, Luke Coulson. And today I'm joined by our guest, Anastasia Zardyke. How'd I go with your second name there?
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Well, hi, Anastasia. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for having me.
Tell me where you're calling in from.
I'm actually calling in from Park City, Utah, where my sister lives. We came up here on Sunday, Monday. We drove up from San Diego. I just finished doing the San Diego Writers Festival. I'm the director of communications for that, and it was on Saturday, so we decided to leave town and take a break.
Oh, that's good.
Utah.
Well, I won't take up too much of your break, but thank you again for coming on.
No worries.
So every week we have a guest who comes on and tells us a little bit about their life, and very specifically we talk about surviving life-changing events and experiences. And guests come on and talk about things that have happened to them. Can be a one-off experience, can be something that happened decades ago, something more recent, something that's still ongoing, can be physical, can be mental, can be anything from accidents to diagnosis to abuse to relationships to gosh, goodness knows. And we like to concentrate on the journey, right? The journey through and into the recovery of it or the processing of it. And we've built a community here of people who are going through stuff, people who have been going through stuff. And having guests on to come in and talk about this gives our listeners some hope. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience, this podcast. It's been very therapeutic for me. So with all of that said, Anastasia, where would you like to begin?
So I've been thinking about this for a while, where to begin. At age 60, I've gone through most of the things you just described, which I think by the time most people are, they have.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start with something is going to seem fairly innocuous at the beginning, but then as the story unfolds, it'll link to some things that happened in the past and explain kind of where I am now and how I got here. So in February of 2021, early morning, I was planning to go on a hike. I went downstairs and we had a vase of flowers that were a little droopy. So I pulled them out and I went into the backyard and I grabbed a few flowers from the garden. I thought I would clip the bottoms. But when I came back in, I had my hands full and I didn't close the door. So I was standing at the sink and I was clipping the ends off the droopy flowers and the fresh flowers to make a bouquet. And my husband came in the room and he said, "Are you going back outside?" And I lost it. Totally lost it. I perceived this comment to be passive aggressive. And it was like, I don't even remember all the things that were said, but it was like years, like decades of suppressed frustration and rage and sadness just started spilling out of me. And again, I don't really remember exactly what I said, but I remember as I left the house, I said, "Maybe you'll be lucky and maybe I'll jump." And I got in the car and I drove away. And the place I was going is a place that I hike at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. I had not been hiking there that much because of COVID. And in California, they even closed some of the hiking trails, but they'd reopened this place and I was headed there. I had been intending to go there, but now my purpose was totally different.
Wow.
And I felt like it's hard to describe people who have been in this spot. When you've made this decision that you were going to end your life, it's like you have this feeling of this will never end. This pain, this darkness, this fog that's swirling around, that's everywhere inside of me will never end. Mm-hmm. And it's physically painful. And I just wanted it to stop. And as I was driving to the hiking spot, I remember I was driving down, as we call it in California, the five, which my brothers and sisters who live in Chicago tease me about, like, why do you call it the? Like, it's not the, it's just five.
I'm in LA, it's the 405 and it's the
405. It's the 10. But anyway, so I'm driving down the five and there's these cement, there was doing some construction near La Jolla and they were doing some, they had these cement barriers up. And I remember thinking to myself, like, if I drove into those, would that work? And then I started thinking, no, because what if I survived? Then I'd be even more of a burden. I remember thinking distinctly, like, oh, no, you'd be more of a burden. If you're going to do it, you have to succeed, because otherwise you're just... One of my reasons for doing it was to spare my family from having to deal with me anymore.
Yeah. Gosh.
Got to the bottom of the hill, went to park my car and realized I didn't have my phone. And I started to think about, I didn't bring water. I didn't bring anything. And I'm a very prepared hiker. So this was like out of character for me. But I was starting to that thought would come to me and I would be like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're dehydrated when you jump, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
So I start hiking up and it's one of these hikes that you take a road up. And then at the top, there's all these different hikes that go down to the cliffs that are coming down from La Jolla into the ocean. Mm. And I had in mind exactly where I was going to do it. And I'm walking along and all of a sudden I thought, I don't have my phone and my husband's probably worried and he's going to call my kids. Mm. And I was like, I do not want him to call my kids. Mm. So I came upon this group of hikers. It was like four guys in their 50s and they were wearing masks because it was still COVID. And I said, can I borrow a phone? Mm. And I could tell that there was that look on their faces during COVID. You know, people weren't like, I don't want you touching possessions.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
But this one guy was like, yeah. And I said, I forgot my phone. I just need to let someone know I'm okay. Mm. So I texted, this is me. I'm okay. Mm. And I gave him back the phone. And I realized, like, I was lying. I was lying as I was texting it. Yeah. I was not okay. I wasn't even close to okay. Which ties into the rest of the story because when I get to it, it's like, it was like afterwards, there was a recognition that that's what I've been doing my whole life.
Yeah.
My whole life, I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
But I got onto the path and I'm like walking along and just this sliver of something came into my head. I was thinking about my parents dying and how traumatic that was and how I was still grieving and how I just would come in waves. And I started thinking, oh my God, what are you doing to your kids?
Yeah, wow.
And then I realized not only am I going to just traumatize them terribly, but also this is a place we've always hiked as a family and this place will be ruined for them. Any hike will be ruined for them. I'm going to be destroying my children. And so I got to the point where I had already calculated in my head, how long will it take to hit? Do you jump? Do you dive? Do you jump? All of these thoughts were going through my head. But when I got to this thought of my kids, all of that just kind of went away.
Yeah.
And I realized this is not the solution. You have to come up with a way that's not so sensational.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I had decided not to do it. It was just that I decided not to do it that way.
Interesting.
So I sort of hugged the inside of the, so I would stay away from the cliffs. I came back up the other side. And as I was walking along, my best friend is walking towards me. And I'm thinking, what are the odds?
Oh yeah, wow.
But she's here. That's how my brain was. It was just not thinking clearly. And of course she was there because my husband.
She'd come to find you.
Immediately called a bunch of people and said, wow. Can you come and help me find her? And she was one of them. And she took me into her arms and I was crying. And we had not seen each other since the beginning of COVID.
Gosh.
And she took me over to a bench and she sat me down and I'm like, I'm okay. I'm okay. And she's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not okay. You have to stop saying you're okay.
Yeah.
You're not okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay that you're not okay.
Hardest thing, isn't it?
And so my husband then came, she texted him, I've got her. He came up and found us. He took me home. And that afternoon, I made what would be, I now know, was the one of the hardest calls I've ever made in my life, was to call and tell someone that I wanted to die. But as soon as the words were out of my mouth, that this feeling of tightness in my chest, this feeling, that worrying feeling started to go away. It started to just, it was like admitting, saying the words out loud and having somebody on the other end of the phone, like that feeling like someone's going to do something now.
Yeah. Because you'd been bottling all of that up for years and you had
years.
So I'm just, by the way, like I mean, sort of half telling my story here in that I was utterly depressed and running away from, I didn't know. And I think we'll come to this in your story. I didn't know. I hadn't figured it out. The trauma I was on, that I was suffering, the feelings I was suppressing. I just knew that nothing felt right and nothing that I did felt right. I felt like I was completely worthless. I couldn't figure out what the point was, what my purpose was. Interesting when you said the passive aggressive, when your husband was simply asking if you were going back outside again. I still am working through those from my father used to continuously tell me I was doing things wrong, right? I'd done this wrong. You'd done that wrong. You put that in the wrong place. Do it again. Do it again. How many times do I have to tell you? And so even in my relationship now, my girlfriend will say, is that, and it just brought back this. She'd say, have you finished with that plate? And I take that to mean, what's fucking wrong with you, you fucking idiot? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is, that's how it sounds to me. It sounds like that's what she's saying to me. Like, are you a complete fucking moron? And all she's saying is, are you finished with the plate? Because I'm putting it in the dishwasher, you know? And what I,
absolutely.
And so I really, really relate to that. And we can get to, from your side of, like, what that that sudden trigger to everything just overflowed in your brain. But quickly, had you reacted like that before, previously, like in your relationship with your husband? Were you taking things incorrectly? Had you always been down on yourself?
Only once or twice. There were one or two times in the past where I took a comment, and I'm a very deep thinker, which is both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we were having a conversation and I was explaining something and he said, what's your point? And I took it to be not just what was the point of what I was saying, but what was the point of me? Like, why was I even here? Like, and that started a similar type of like spilling. But I think that what I realized in, you know, making that call it's when you say, yes, I have a plan and yes, I was going to, yes, I, yes to everything. I was tempted to say no, right? I was tempted to say, no, I'm fine.
Yeah, like, of course.
It was just a momentary thing. And, but as you said, I realized in that moment, and I've realized since in evaluating how I got there, that this wasn't something that had just popped up. This is something that I've been dealing with actually since I was 9 or so.
Yeah.
When I was 9, I'm the 4th of 5 children. To this day, I will tell anybody that I had a very happy childhood. Mm. I had great parents. I'm still best friends with my 4 brothers and sisters. Mm. My parents were both very involved in the community and wanting to help. My dad was a minister. My mom was a school teacher. And starting when I was in 6, we had foster children that came and lived with us. And our second foster child was a girl whose both of her parents had died by suicide.
Gosh.
She was very troubled. She was very She was a big girl. We were all tiny little kids. And even though I was 9, she was 13. So it was just enough of an age difference. And my parents were very big on, you know, we all need to love Peggy. We need to give her the love that she's never had before.
Wow.
And I knew how bad things were for her in her previous foster placements. She told me stories. She told all of us stories. One of the houses had a baby. They wouldn't let her. They took her for piano lessons, but she couldn't depress the keys because it made noise.
Oh my God.
And now looking back on it, like during the time that she lived with us, I started having horrible stomach pains whenever I played the piano,
right,
to the point where I had to start taking mild tranquilizers before I ate because I had developed nervous colitis.
Wow.
And what I didn't tell anyone during that whole time period was that she was sexually abusing me. And I didn't know because I was 9.
Wow.
And she said it was love.
Oh my goodness.
And I was supposed to love her. And I knew that it was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know when something's wrong,
yeah,
even when you don't know why it's wrong, you know it's wrong. But I didn't want my parents to think that they had done something that brought harm to me.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to send her back,
yeah,
because that would mean. And so all of those things, I just locked them down.
That's a lot.
Locked them down.
That's a lot for a nine-year-old to have gone through, but also making those decisions and feeling that you needed to protect your parents.
Everybody else.
You didn't
protect
want
everybody.
Them to be blamed. That's just, and also that kind of ties into this whole thing of you shutting down and keeping everything in here and not talking
absolutely
to anyone. And that probably started the trend of, I will just deal with that myself.
Yes.
Which is not good advice.
I am a caretaker of everyone else. I am my husband always says, you're the best rainy day friend. Like, if somebody needs something, you know, I'm there with I'm the one who schedules the interventions for other people. I'm the one who, you know, my stepdaughter, we've had our share of trauma in my family. And, anyway, long story short, I started processing my own depression. And then I started also realizing that I was, stuck in dealing with depression and people around me because I had in my own thinking this block against medication, this block against admitting that I wasn't all right.
Yeah.
As the fourth of five children, the way that I got attention in a very bustling household, we were all within 7 years. My mom had five kids in 7 years. So we were boom, boom, boom.
Wow.
And I was the good girl.
Yeah.
And so I was the straight A student, the cheerleader, the everything you were supposed to be, I did. Because that was how I was going to be, make myself stand out in this family and make myself stand out in the world.
Gosh.
And depression and anxiety don't fit in that picture.
No.
You can't be all of those good things and be depressed. So I didn't sleep. I was anxious all the time. I had anxiety and an insomnia induced psychotic break my junior year when I was I transferred from Smith College to Stanford University, and even more pressure to get good grades, meet people. And I just developed, I didn't sleep for 4 days. And I now recognize it because I was seeing things and hearing things. And I now recognize that it was. But at the time, again, I was, you know, this was back in the, you know, the 80s. People weren't talking about mental health the way they do now.
But you're putting this pressure on you're sort of putting this pressure on yourself, aren't you? In terms of,
oh, absolutely.
You're setting your, it's not coming from your parents again. This is coming from you wanting to stand out, setting goals for yourself, challenging yourself, trying to be. I mean, that is exhausting, isn't it? It's exhausting. Yeah.
And I managed it most of my life with exercise and writing in journals and occasionally going in every once in a while to talk to a therapist until, you know, I thought I was done, right? I go for a few times. I'm better now. And But then during something happened during COVID, and I, also my daughter was experiencing some severe depression. And I recognized that the advice I was giving her, I wasn't taking myself. But I was able to rationalize that in my head because I didn't need it, right? Like, she needed the help and I wanted her to be okay. But to acknowledge it in myself. But now I look back on that time period and I think about how often I woke my husband up in the middle of the night because I was anxious about not putting the right closing on an email.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't have said best. I should have said thanks. I could stay awake for 4 hours thinking about that. And so anyway, but I started to realize how I had impacted my family by refusing to get help. And I realized what much of a struggle it was when my daughter was struggling and I couldn't help her. And so I'd written my first book was all about trauma and suppressed trauma and a life that seems perfect on the outside that falls apart when a trigger happens. And so it was like, it was in fiction, but I was clearly trying to, it wasn't my story at all,
right?
But it addressed some of the issues of my life. And my second book, when I started writing it, I realized that it was about, trying to see both sides of the equation when you have someone who's struggling with mental health issues and the people who love them not being able to help them.
And can we sorry to interrupt you, but it's like, you said previously, it's like when your daughter was struggling and you talked about looking back and thinking that you weren't there, you know, you weren't there because of everything that you were going through. Was it noticeable to your family members that you were struggling? Like, you talk about waking your husband up with anxiety, or were you masking it?
I was masking it.
Yeah, because that's what I did.
And you know, my daughter was masking it for years. When she finally told us that she suffered from depression, she told us when she was like 19 years old, she'd it been since she was 16. And she was similar to me in like that high school doing it all.
Yeah.
You know, she did it all.
Yeah.
And even now, when I tell people about what happened that February of 2021, they don't believe me.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And it, you know,
it's,
I think one of the things,
isn't it?
Yeah, one of the things I realized is that so many people out there, we don't know what they're struggling with. You don't have any idea.
Of course not.
You know, the person who's standing behind you at Starbucks that seems kind of irritating or short with people. You know, maybe they just found out their husband had cancer, or maybe, you know, like, we just don't know.
No.
And what people portray on the surface is often not at all what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And I wish I could say that after that incident in February that I got help and everything was great, but I still resisted it even then. And I finally went on an antidepressant about 4 months later when I had another just total meltdown.
Right.
And then, because I tried CBT in the meantime, and I did that, and it did help. And so I thought, see, you're okay. See?
Yeah.
It's just a blip. It was a blip.
Yeah.
But then I started taking this antidepressant, and this happened with my daughter too. I think that what a lot of people still don't understand is how it's a science, but it's a science that still has a lot. The brain is the last frontier. We just don't know enough about why things work.
Yeah.
What doesn't work.
Yeah.
Why does one thing work for one person, but not another?
Yeah.
And it takes a while for you to be able to make that determination. And then it's whether, okay, is this a dosing issue or is this the wrong medicine? So there's all of this. It's not an easy path. Once you've made the decision to get help, whether that's through medication or CBT or yoga or seeing a therapist, there's all kinds of modalities of treatment that are out there, but finding the right one for you can take time.
Totally.
And it's bearing, you know, figuring that out and having the patience and the perseverance to stick to it until you find something that works.
Yeah.
I just had an adjustment to my medication 30 days ago. Like it's still, they put me on Prozac. I loved Prozac. loved it. But then ended up getting one of the rare side effects that nobody knew was a side effect medication. And I was in and out of the ER for 6 months until they figured out, oh, this is from your medication.
The thing that they put on the label that they tell you they just have to put on the label because it's only ever happened to one person is the thing that happened to you.
That's what happened to me.
Well, I just upped my dose. I'm on Celexa, right? And I've been
That's what I take.
Great. Well, congrats. Welcome to the club. And I'm you know, you and I have very, very, very similar stories. Now, I don't know if we've had very similar lives, but we've had very similar stories in that I really, really relate to the childhood trauma, the shutting down. I mean, in my case, it was all about drinking, and that's how I that was my self medication, right? And since I've got sober over 5 years ago now, and started this podcast, and you talk about finding the thing that is for you, right? And for me, it's talking to people like yourself and realizing everyone's been going through some shit, and we're all going to be okay. It's working on myself and my self-belief and love for myself and realizing I'm not a piece of shit, which I was kind of brought up to believe. A little bit of medication along the way, and also cutting out what I perceived to be my medication, which was drinking. And my life is in a really good trajectory. However, to your point, doesn't mean that's that and I can start drinking again or come off the medication or stop doing the podcast or stop talking to people or stop telling people when I don't feel okay, because a lifetime of suppressed trauma probably takes a lifetime of maintenance to keep it under control. And for me the maintenance part of it doesn't need to be a chore. The maintenance part of it, by doing what you're doing and talking and writing a book and journaling, finding out that Why am I feeling better today and enjoying that moment and then not getting disheartened when tomorrow you don't feel so good. But it's an open conversation, right? When it's an open conversation, I used to think, I'm not telling anyone I feel awful. I'm not telling anyone when I'm sick. I'm not telling anyone that I feel weak. I'm not telling anybody that I'm sad because it's weakness and I need everybody to think that I'm strong, that I'm the ringleader. You're talking about being a rainy day friend. So was I. When I tell people that I nearly killed myself and drank myself to death and was drinking in silence without telling anybody for 10 solid years and had, you know, liver, this, that, they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we used to see you at, you're brilliant. You're hilarious. You were just, because I'm doing that because of my pain and my suffering and my story that's swirling around in my head. And that wasn't for anyone else. That was for me. And as soon as that story was laid out on the table and I realized that the only way to exercise these fucking demons are to get them out, like just what you said, speak out of my mouth, help me.
Yes.
I'm not all right. That's all.
Yeah, I'm not okay. I'm not okay.
So began the recovery.
Yeah, and I think it's a simple phrase, but you have to mean it. You know what I mean? Like you have to actually say, I'm not okay, and I'm really not okay. And I remember so many times when you asked whether I masked it. I mean, another whole story, which we don't have time to talk about today. But you know, when my stepdaughter was 15, we found out that her mother, so my husband's ex-wife, who we had been told had cancer, did not have cancer, but instead was struggling with addiction and mental health, undiagnosed mental health issues. We were told she had cancer so that her disappearances would be explicable. Oh, wow. She's back in treatment or whatever. She didn't come to the door.
Gosh.
But it turned out that she'd been, and my stepdaughter had learned coping mechanisms to deal with being alone sometimes when she was 11 for 3 days because her mom was in jail or whatever. Wow. So she comes to live with us when she's 15, doesn't want to be with us. We have two small children. Mm. Mother moves out to California to be near her, but doesn't see her and ends up dying with a heroin overdose when my stepdaughter's 16 and my husband and I get the call that we have to go to the medical examiner's office and we have to tell stepdaughter that her mother's dead, and
that night,
have a PA thing that I've scheduled, and I'm the president, or vice president, and I have to be there.
Yeah.
And I say, I just have to go show my face. That's it. I'll show my face and I'll leave.
Yeah.
So I go and show my face, and people are saying, "Oh, how are you?" And I'm like, "Fine. How are you?"
Yeah.
And I realized, like, this is such a not true statement.
Yeah.
This is so not true.
Yeah.
And how many times have I done that in my life?
Yeah.
And how did I teach my daughter? Because I wonder now, like, did I model for her this masking that she then did herself? Is that one of my legacies to her? Like, is that, I mean, it's a horrible thing to think.
Yeah.
We talk about it now openly, my daughter and I.
That's the thing, you know.
But, you know, she was hiding it for years. And so it has helped me to write about it. It has helped me to talk about it openly with people the way you and I are talking about it. I met someone last week and we were talking about mental health things. And he was like, what are you taking?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm taking Celexa, but they just put me on some Wellbutrin to kind of give me a boost because I'm feeling kind of flat.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I've done that. Like, and it was so freeing.
Just like we're doing today.
Like, to be able to talk about it and not feel shame and not feel less than.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I think that just to go back to that, not to feel shame, I never thought I would be able to recount what I used to do, how much I used to drink, the lying around all of that. And it's so liberating, not only to tell people that care, but also to yell it out on this podcast to thousands of people that I'll, you know, I don't know. And it's so amazing that it's all out in the open now, because I'll have people that I used to drink with and people that I thought were the rainy day friends, and they'll text me and I haven't heard from them for years. And they'll say, I'm really inspired by your podcast and I really think I've got to do something about my drinking. Or I don't know if you know this, but I've been a cocaine addict for 6 years and my wife doesn't know. And I'm more than happy to be that person that they can confide in. Yeah. And I'm more than happy to let them know that the telling me is the first. And again, this podcast is never about recovery in those terms. Like, I made sure me and Kyle made sure this podcast was not a drink and drugs recovery podcast, because trauma and depression and anxiety and these events don't have to revolve around that. And almost probably about 10% of our guests at some point went to drink and drugs, but you know, that's my story. And if people can relate to me and I can help them, similarly, people hear the stuff that you were going through, the stuff that was bottled up, that led you to walk out the fucking door with the sole mission of throwing yourself to your death. There are people listening to this now, and there's people that probably you know, and they're in your circle, that are relating to that. And they're like, holy shit, life doesn't need to be this way, you know?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you said that last line that you just said. What was interesting is when my daughter first started taking an antidepressant, she called me up after she'd been on it for a few weeks. And she said, I'm feeling differently. And mom, I didn't know you could feel this way.
Wow. Gosh.
And I thought, oh my gosh. Like, and I feel the same way now, like about, particularly about things like anxiety. And I have not had that. I still wake up in the middle of the night because I'm a bad sleeper, but I don't lie awake worrying about stupid things.
Yeah.
I have more control over my life.
Yeah.
And it took me losing control totally to get there.
Yeah.
But when I tell people, it's a strength to be able to say, correct, I need help.
Correct.
That's not weakness. That's strength. That's taking control of your life back.
No, exactly.
It feels contrarian, but it's not. I don't know if that makes sense, but
It makes total sense. And for me to like walk through the shame and the guilt of like things I did and how I was is an extremely empowering thing for me in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just showing in a humble way, we're just showing people that like, if you've got something that is killing you inside, that or there's an anxiety or there's a depression or there is a situation or there's a relationship that is making you want to vomit every morning because you don't want to be in it, or there's abuse or there's something's not right, or you're living with something, you know, that we've got one thing I've realized, we've got one life, we've got one fucking
exactly
life. Imagine if you get to 18 and like, my God, I wish I'd just bloody well let that out and told someone about that. And
absolutely,
I could have lived the last 30 years of my, or the next 30 years of my life from the age of 50 or whatever, you know. And I thank my lucky stars that I managed to come, just like you, literally come back from the edge of a freaking cliff. Do you know what I mean? Mine was a bit more proverbial.
I do.
It's the same thing. And we're the lucky ones. It doesn't mean that the fight or the recovery or the effort stops now. For me, it's just the beginning. Because I love talking to people about this stuff. You know?
Well, and I think that that's an important message, too, is that there's no magic solution. And life continues to throw things at you. Mm. And there may be some things that get thrown at you that trigger something. And or that make what you've, the coping mechanisms you've had that have been working, suddenly they stop working. Mm. It's okay to say, I'm not okay again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, and I think that's, I mean, if there's something that I would want to say to people out there is that, and also I would want to say to people out there, if you see someone struggling, there are resources out there for you. The person who is watching, the person who wants to help, there are resources for you too. Like I just learned that 988, the number you can call if you're feeling suicidal, family members, friends can call that number to get advice.
That's amazing.
What do I do? There are resources out there for families and those who see their children or their husband or their best friend struggling and don't know how to help them. There are resources you can find on the internet. You can find them through your healthcare organizations. You can find them through community. And you can call your doctor and say, I have a friend who's doing, like, what resources are there? I think we all sort of feel like helpless and we don't really know what to say or we don't really know what to do. So we don't do anything. And that's makes those people feel even more alone. Totally. And so that's the message I want to send is like, you're not alone. Number one, if you're out there and you're hearing us talk about this, no, you're not alone. And number two, if you're helping somebody who's feeling alone, like somebody once asked me, what would have helped you that day? And I've been thinking about that a lot. And I realized that if somebody had said, if my husband or somebody had said to me before I ran out of the house, hold on, grab my hand. We're going to make this call together. You don't have to do this alone. I'm right here next to you and I'm not leaving until we make this call together. Not till you make the call, but till we make the call together. That would have helped me
he wouldn't have known to do that. You know what I mean?
No. And I don't want it. He's a great person. And I can't tell you how many nights he helped me get through those anxious nights of being crazy. Now I look back at it and I was like, I was not right in the head. And he would just listen and talk me through it. And, you know, he's a great guy, but nothing was going to,
It's interesting you mentioned that number because, we don't know if we're on the side of the, you know, if me or you who doesn't want to be here anymore or the person who's dealing with somebody that doesn't want to be, we're not trained to know these things, you know. I did want to just, before we wrap up, I want to.
I'm sorry. No, I kind of went off on soapbox.
There's no apologies. Everything has been so wonderful and relevant. I can't even understand where the time's gone, if I'm honest with you. I do want to touch on one thing, which was people pleasing. And that was that you mentioned that you didn't want to let your parents down because they made an effort to bring this girl in to adopt, to foster her. And then this whole reaction you had to leaving the door open, were a lot of the time we didn't want to ask for help because we thought we were going to burden people or we thought we were going to let people down, right? And for me, there was a big element of people pleasing and saying yes and not doing things on my terms because I wanted to make sure everybody else was happy before I was happy, and I thought that was the thing that would give me happiness. But of course, I was neglecting myself all along. So I just wanted to touch on that because it sounds like you suffered a little bit from like, well, I'm not going to tell everybody that I'm not okay because I don't really want to put that on them, you know?
Yeah, I still do that. I still do that. So that, thank you for that message because I need to hear that.
Yeah.
And I do want to mention because I mentioned that I had this book mostly because I think that it so far, the reaction that I've been getting is that some people actually want to give it to people that they think it could help. So it's called The Other Side of Nothing, which is all about, you know, what's on the other side of nothing. You know, you can say that the other side of nothing is everything.
Yeah.
So it could be a good message, but it's also sometimes the other side of nothing feels like there's nothing.
Nothing.
And
yeah.
So anyway, if it is about mother child relationships and mental health and reaching out for help and also the struggle that loved ones have when they can't fix somebody.
And is this the book you've written or the book that's coming out, or both?
The book that's coming out May 28th. Yeah.
It's okay. Coming out May 28th. And so for our listeners, we'll make sure that there's a link on the show notes. So go to the notes in the show notes, and any links where we can find Anastasia or any social or any links to the book or when the book can be ordered will be on the show notes. And I think that is an amazing time to wrap things up, because it's just been brilliant. Okay. You've half told my story, and I've related to so much that we've discussed, and it's been really enlightening and wonderful. And thank God you're still here. And, you know, there's so many messages in your story.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. I have to say that I love the name of your podcast.
Thank you.
Because every time I say it to someone, I laugh.
Yeah.
I
almost think like that's what's kind of got us on the map, you know, and every time I intro whoever the guest is and I say it how I say it, like, well, that fucked me up. Every single time the guests will laugh. And so it just gets us off to such a great start, because it sets the tone for the podcast, which is, I've been through some shit, but we're going to fucking talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Absolutely. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for what you're doing. I am really, really appreciative, and I hope that what we talked about helps somebody out there to feel less alone.
Thank you again. It's been wonderful.